Good evening in Hungary and good afternoon in the United States. My name is Christina Fahir and I am hosting this event today. Welcome all to the talk series entitled Linguistic Evenings and organized by the Debrecen Linguistics Committee of the Hungarian Research Network. The chair of the committee is György Rákosi and the secretaries are Péter Szűcs and myself. Before announcing our speaker, I would like to say some words about technicalities. With the kind permission of our speaker today, we will make a recording of the talk, including the discussion, to share it on YouTube and on social media afterwards. So if you have questions or comments after the talk, but you do not wish to show up directly in the video, please send us a message via chat, and we are happy to share with others. Now, without further ado, I would like to introduce our invited speaker today, Dr. Antonio Medina Rivera. Dr. Antonio Medina Rivera is professor and chair of the Department of World Languages, Literatures, and Cultures at Cleveland State University, Ohio. He is originally from Puerto Rico. Professor Medina Rivera received his PhD in Spanish linguistics from the University of Southern California. His areas of study include Puerto Rican Spanish, Spanish in the United States, phonological variation, language attitudes, language maintenance, and Spanish in the US Catholic Church. Dr. Medina Rivera, we are really happy to have you here today. The floor is yours.
Thank you very much. And thank you for your attendance in for today's presentation. Let me share the presentation, woman. Okay, so I'll change the title a little bit because I started working on the presentation, and since most of you are not very much familiarized with Puerto Rican Spanish or probably with Spanish social linguistic, I felt that I needed to give some extra information. So in order to understand language attitudes in Puerto Rican Spanish, I felt that it was my responsibility also to give you some ideas on phonological variation and some of the studies that have been done in the field. So in that way, you can have a better understanding of what I'm presenting. The project, the final part of the presentation, which is the project, is still ongoing. I'm still working with the statistics. And hopefully I'll have it completely by January, but at least I can give you some of the results that I have for the moment. Okay, this study examined language attitudes and perceptions toward pronunciation of phonological variant in Puerto Rican Spanish, which happens to be the multiple vibrant R. Probably some of you are familiarized with the sound because it appears in other languages. In Spanish, we have two R's. We have R like in pero, and then a multiple vibrant like perro. And we have minimal pairs to show the distinction between the two. The non-standard pronunciation of R, of multiple vibrant R, could be either velar or uvular. So it depends. You know, the production can go in either one part of your track, and it's a mark for many people of national identity in Puerto Rican Spanish. The reason is because it doesn't appear in other, it's a feature that we don't have in other varieties of Spanish, but at the same time it's connected with rural speaking, lack of education. And in many ways, even though it's very present among the population, it still have a level of stigmatization. So people still correct it, or people make fun of it sometimes, or they make jokes about it. So you can see the two things, you know, identity, national identity, but at the same time, an element of stigmatization. In terms of the sound, which is the first thing that I have to show, the multiple vibrant R appear in several contexts. So we have it at the beginning of a word, and when appears at the beginning of a word, it's only represented by one R, and you have the word rosa, rosa. It can appear also between vowels, and when it appears between vowels, it's doubled. So you see the written representation appears with two R's, and it's carro. And also, you have the same sound after consonants S, L, and N. And you have three examples there, which is Israel, alrededor, Enrique. The standard pronunciation, like I said, is a multiple vibrant. It's an alveolar sound. And then we have the non-standard pronunciation or sound, which it could be either velar, uvular, and something even very, very similar to the velar g. So I can show you some examples of the non-standard pronunciation. So instead of carro, it would be something like cajo or cago. Instead of Israel, Israel. Alrededor, Enrique. So you can see the distinction between the pronunciation of both going from a front sound articulated in the front to an articulation in the back. In terms of frequency of velarization, this has been something that had been studied for many years. And the first study about this was done by the Spaniard Navarro Tomás, and we're talking here about 1948. And according to Navarro Tomás, at that time, he calculated, of course, the way of doing research at that time was a little bit different to the way we do it, but he calculated about 59% of the occurrences in people. And he did his research around the island. Then after Navarro Tomás, we have the study from López Morales from 1983, and he showed a percentage of 14%. But he did his study mostly or all in the metropolitan area in the capital city. We have Hammond from 1987 showing 72%, which is a very, very high. And he, different to López Morales, he did his study. Or collected his data in rural area in the southwest of the Puerto Rico, which many people see as the stereotype they have of people from the west southwest of the island is that they have almost categorical pronunciation of the non-standard multiple vibrant R. My study from 1997 show only 9%, and it was done also in urban area like López Morales. And then you have other studies from 1999 in the Norwest, 53%. Holmquist from 2003, 65%, mostly also in rural area. And Valentin Marquez in the Southwest with 19%. So you see very different. It's difficult to establish a clear pattern because you see between 9% to 70% in terms of occurrences of this sound. Besides analyzing the frequency of the sound, I decided to add other variables in my study. And what I did, I divided my the people that I have, the speakers that I have, I divided between people that were known by me or they were very much familiarized with me, and people that I didn't know at all. And you can see as for the variable R that there's different in the frequency, but in the probability, it was pretty much very similar, 0.51 versus 0.49. Those are probabilities number. The one that I put on the other side, on the left side of the table, refers to another variation that we have at the end of the syllable for single R. Which is change into an L sound. I give you an example. This from verdad become beldad. So it's and it only happened at the end of a syllable. This one was more significant in terms of the differences. So it's interesting to see that for variable R is not multiple vibrant is not as high as it was for the other variant. In terms of trying to do all the things with this variable, I also submitted some of the speakers to other situation because I would say this is something that only occur in very informal situations, or if this is something that happened in other contexts. If you look, focus on the right side where you have velarization, you can see that you have three possible situations. I did the regular interview with the sociolinguistic interview with the speaker. I recorded the speaker in a group situation with two or three people in a restaurant or in a family gathering. And then I, for some of the speakers, I also have them as part of the work, they used to do presentations. They were either teachers or people in the medical fields who were used to do oral presentations. So I decided also to record them in an oral presentation. So if you can see, you can see the differences. For the velarization, you can have 0.40, 0.41, not too much different between the oral presentation and in the interview, but there's a drastic statistical difference between those two and the group. You move from 0.4 to 0.85. And similar to the RL variable, here probably is a little bit more distinguished between the oral presentation with 0.16 and the group with 0.66. So the situation in this case is a very meaningful, significant factor to analyze the production of this specific phonological variants. In terms of who are more likely to produce non-standard pronunciation, you have a list again of the same studies that I mentioned before, and you can see the difference. For Hammond, it was mostly men and rural. For my study, different, it was mostly women and informal context, and so on. I'm not going to read all of them, but you can see some specific patterns there related to rurality, to generation, and to men versus a woman or socioeconomic status as well. Besides that, there's also studies on language attitudes toward this specific phonological feature. And you can see that the negative attitudes go there from 32.8 in Emanuele's study from 1986 to the highest, which will be 85%. So it looks like people in the island, and those are studies done in the island, people still see a negative reaction to the production of the back variants of the multiple vibrant R. It's very interesting, and probably most of the people who have done studies on this specific variable, they notice that even though people have negative attitudes toward the production, they still produce the sound. And let me give you some examples. When I was doing the study, I was recording, some people tell me, oh, I never produce that sound. And then when I record it, you can get the 9%, the 10%, the 12%, probably they don't do it all the time, but depending on the situation, they are able to produce the non-standard sound. Also, some people don't seem to be aware of the production. I remember telling one lady, I just say the sound. I say, do you say ajos? And she told me, she responded, I don't say ajos, I say ajos. So she pronounced it exactly both times using a back sound, but at the same time, she was not aware or conscious that she was producing that sound. In terms for this study, for the present study, what I decided to do was to select 10 oral clips in context. So I selected my data this time from a comedy, which is called Titigandinga. It's a Facebook comedy with puppets. And they represent kind of a semi-rural area in Puerto Rico in the north part. Each clip is going to include one occurrence of the multiple vibrant art, 7 of them with a minus front or a non-standard pronunciation, and 3 of them with a standard pronunciation. What they have to do is to evaluate or to identify the sound. I give them the specific word in the questionnaire, and they have to evaluate the sound as acceptable or not acceptable. But first, before doing the test with people, I just want to make sure that my perceptions as the linguist were correct, or there was agreement, because sometimes there could be differences in the perception. I can hear something, but another person can hear something different. Let me give you an example also from Puerto Rico. In Puerto Rico, we have deletion of or aspiration of the sibilant, the S, at the end of a syllable. And it looks like some people can hear it and some people cannot hear it. And some languages, sometimes they have determined some of the occurrences and none have a complete deletion. But then when they have been doing a study with a spectrogram, the spectrogram can identify that there's still a trace. There's still a trace of the sound, but not all the speakers of Spanish will be able to hear the sound, depending on how strong or how weak the pronunciation of the S is for them. So I consulted with five additional linguists who are trained, of course, and who work in Puerto Rican Spanish. I asked them to evaluate the 10 oral clips that I selected, and it was good in this case that all five were in agreement at the 100% agree with the same perceptions that I had. So I needed that to be able to proceed with the second part. So I have a total of 80 participants in the study, and they have to listen to the clips and they have to say whether the variant was acceptable or not acceptable. Or another way to say, I didn't want to use the term standard or not standard, because for a linguist, that could be something understandable and clear. But for somebody who is not a linguist, and also depending on their level of education, they might have issues with the term standard or non-standard when they are talking about a specific sound. The words that I use appear there in the list. Everything, of course, is in Spanish. El señor aborrece un becerro, mi rebaño, esta rodilla, los perros, bien arranca, a reír, lo tiene realengo, un ratito, y me revienta. The words that are marked with an asterisk are the only three that were standard pronunciation. So I included three standard, and then the rest are non-standard pronunciation. I don't know if you can hear. I'm going to try with the clip because I don't know. You let me know if you can hear it or not.
Me decirte una cosa. Esto se llama envidia. Y hay que ser agradecido con las cosas que nos da el Señor. Y con la envidia el Señor no va. El Señor aborrece a los envidiosos. Ay, me decirte.
Were you able to hear the sound or not? Okay.
Yes,
so the specific word there was aborrece. And then, and it was pronounced with a minus front pronunciation. And then number seven, which is a standard pronunciation and is arre. You can also listen to it. So you can see the difference between aborrece and arreir with a very clear distinction in both of them. Why I wanted to check perceptions, you know, I want to emphasize about this because this is an important part of the study. Many social linguistic studies on phonological variation before the 2000 were pretty much based on the auditory perception of the linguist. You can let me know later on for Hungarian if that's the case still there, or do you have a difference in the way that you do? More recent studies, they have been kind of been problematic for them, basing only on their auditory perceptions, and they have been using the spectrograms. So they submit the clip to the spectrogram, to the analysis of a machine, that is used to determine what kind of sound produced. So, of course, there's going to be pros and cons. In terms of pros with auditory perception, you can collect a big data. You can have 5,000 tokens. You can have 10,000 tokens of the sound with a spectrogram, because it takes a lot of time to do each one individually. You're going to be more limited. With the auditory perception also, even though some people can disagree with me on this, but it's very hard for many people to distinguish between a velar sound and an uvular sound, because they can sound pretty similar for the listener. But the spectrogram will be more specific of that. If you submit the word or the sound to the spectrogram will be very precise in telling you whether is a velar sound, whether is a frontal alveolar sound, whether it's an uvular sound, or whatever it is. And there have been studies on this. People, and I mentioned Delgado Diaz Galarza and Diaz Campos, they have work on this, and they even have examples that it was not very clear. So even with the spectrogram, sometimes you can have some issues as well. For this study, like I said, it was the perception first of two researchers, the perception of other four linguists, and the perception of the spectrograms to have a clear idea of what the clips or the speakers in the well the comedians in the clips were producing. For this specific study, we had two Latino communities in the U.S. That was not conducted in the in United States, and it was the, and I'm sorry, no, it was not conducted in Puerto Rico. It was conducted in United States, and we have one community from Cleveland and one community from Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Sorry, I kept the writing of Pennsylvania in Spanish rather than in English. These two communities are very interesting because they have a large Latino community. Cleveland around 9%, and Lancaster is a lot higher. But most of the speakers of Latino speakers they have in these two communities are mostly Puerto Ricans. So in many ways, it was two ideal places to conduct the study. But I was interested in the perceptions of both Puerto Ricans and non-Puerto Ricans, because they are living in the same community. They are sharing the same neighborhood. So in many ways, they are in contact with each other, and they are familiarized with the dialect of each other. So we selected 20 native speakers from Puerto Rico, 20 heritage speakers from Puerto Rico, 20 native speakers from Latin America, and 20 heritage speakers from Latin America. I know that the term native speak heritage speaker is a little bit controversial because there are different levels of proficiency, but my partner and I decided to make sure that all the heritage speakers had a proficiency of advanced low, which is equivalent more or less to the B1, B2 in the European system. So you can have an idea. These are people who can narrate, who can describe, who can manipulate pretty well the past tense, but they cannot speak exactly as a native speaker. In terms of demographic, you see mostly women. It's easier to convince women to participate in studies, and there have been studies about that already. In terms of age, it was pretty much equivalent, almost half and half, with people 18, between 18 and 35, and the other half with 35 and up. In terms of education, most of them with college education. It was also easier to convince people with a higher level of education to participate in the study. And then in terms of results that I have, the results here are showing the frequency of agreement with the perception of the linguist. Another way to say it, how many people or how many of the tokens were evaluated correctly. I'm going to use correctly in quotation mark, of course. And you can see the words that have the X in the top were the three standard pronunciation. And it's very interesting that those were the one that people were they were it was easier for them to identify as standard pronunciation. And then you have the others which vary, but probably nothing lower than 60%. The lowest one would be rodilla. So we can see that in some ways people were able to agree with the same judgment of the linguist, but we don't have anything even close. Well, the closest one to 100% would be reír, which I show you in one of the clips. Why is that? Probably that's part of the analysis for later on. What is the difference between the pronunciation? We looked at all the words in the spectrogram, and all of them were clear back pronunciations. There were not doubt in turn of the both in turn of the perception of the linguist and in the evaluation of the spectrogram. So this is still something that we need to analyze. Are there any other distractions? Is the context probably having an impact on the way people evaluate the word? Is the phonological context? We haven't been able to find whether if it's in a, is before stress or after stress has an impact on that. So we haven't been able to identify that as possible. So we're still working on explanations on why this happened. In terms of attitudes, because after they analyze all the words, we ask them to evaluate the pronunciation and what kind of attitude. So you see the dark line represent Puerto Rican speakers, and the light blue represent the Latin American speakers. And you can see interesting that Puerto Rican seems to have more negative evaluation of their own production. There have been studies in which, well, let me give you some background on this. There have been a lot of studies on Puerto Rican Spanish and also Caribbean Spanish. Probably Puerto Rico, even though it's a small island, probably there are more studies on the island than studies from many, many other countries. And the dialect in some places here in the United States have been stigmatized because of differences in the pronunciation. And that seems to have contributed to a low linguistic self-esteem. There have been studies also by Centella that they also make the same connection with Dominican Spanish. Dominicans, which also in the Caribbean, they seems to have also a low self-esteem of their own variety. They always look at the Spanish of other places as being more standard or better. In another study that I did on language attitude, it was interesting when I asked people what would be the model for you. So sometimes they mentioned, instead of mentioning their own dialect, not only Puerto Rican Spanish, but Puerto Rican speakers, also other Latin American speakers, look at Spain as the model for pronunciation. Even though the differences in production in Spain vary from one part to the other, because the dialect of Madrid is very, very different to the dialect of Andalusia. And the dialect of Andalusia is, in fact, more similar to the dialect of the Caribbean. So it's still the perception that people have, specifically of seeing Spain as the mother or the center or the origin of the language, and see that. Other countries that were mentioned as probably a models were Colombia, Peru, and Mexico, that seems to have less a stigma. But again, those are big countries, and there's big differences between the Spanish of Bogota, which is the capital of Colombia, and the Spanish of the coast, of the Caribbean coast, like Cartagena. So sometimes you don't know exactly what people are talking about when they're saying the Spanish from Spain, which one you're talking about. Are you talking about Madrid? Are you talking about other place? Exactly. So that's not very clear. So in terms of conclusion that I have for the moment, I can say that the auditory perception of the five linguists agree with me 100%. The perception of the linguists agree 100% with the spectrograms. The frequencies of acceptability between the linguists and the 80 participants of the study vary from 57.5 for the word rodilla and 96.2 for the word reír. And Puerto Rican speakers, as I mentioned, show the highest frequency of negative attitudes toward the production of back variants, 40% from Puerto Rican versus 20% from the Latin Americans. While Latin American speakers show more neutral evaluation, I can go back to the table. So you look at the neutral, you can see that the highest number goes for non-Puerto Ricans. And we're talking here about 45% versus 30%. And on the other hand, there were more positive evaluations from Puerto Rican speakers at the same time, which is almost a contradiction. You have the highest number of negative, but you also have the highest number of positive evaluation. And that gives you some information of how people are starting to perceive the sound. Is this a stigmatized sound? Is this a sound that we in some ways feel some kind of shame? Or it is becoming a national feature, going back to the number of positive evaluation. People see that as the very distinctive way of Puerto Ricans to talk. The other question that I asked, and I don't have the answer because I didn't have too many people answering the question, I asked them, have you heard this sound in other languages? Or have you heard this sound in other varieties of Spanish? Of course, we don't have evidence of having this velar or uvular sounds in other varieties of Spanish besides Puerto Rico. However, if you look at other European languages, you have seen that they have shifted from having alveolar or front sound to a back sound. And that can include Portuguese. For example, you have Rio de Janeiro. You can think about French, especially the standard French would also have more like between uvular or velar. You can have German and other European languages to be in that case. So why Puerto Rico have that sound? We don't know. It could be there's theories that haven't been proved, but at least the only thing that we can say is that this is something that had happened in other languages. So it seems to be something internal of the languages. And we can see in this case, Puerto Rico, if you want to use a negative word, you can use it as an innovative feature in the language. So I finish with this. I can open it for questions and clarifications. And I go back to the audience. And thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much. And now we are waiting for questions, comments. So please feel free to.
Is Susana, I'm sorry.
Susana.
okay.
All right. Thank you. It was very interesting. My question is when you show, well, it's a huge topic, I understand. So actually I have two questions. One is that, you said that these studies found very different percentages of the uvular, production. Is there a dialectal variation? Can be anything within Puerto Rico or it's not very likely? That's one thing. And the other is when you showed that the identification on this chart where the identification of the form coincided between linguists and naive speakers.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't it, or can't it be because it was all words with, if I remember correctly, with the re, starting with something re. So it's like an R with an E. So can it have any phonological, it just made me think that the alveolar R is really front. And with a palatal vowel, maybe they perceive it more easily.
Yeah. And that, like I told you, is the phonological aspect of the eternal, the linguistic factor. We're still working on them. I should see if we find a consistency, and probably I might be able to look at other examples from the show to see if there's a pattern, because with 10 words it's very difficult to have a pattern. But
And
that would be an
also,
interesting. People mentioned probably also the stress is the stress syllable can have an impact on it. But again, with 10 words is very
it's
difficult.
not enough,
That's exactly. So, but I can
is
go back to the data. I can go back. There's like 50 shows of this comedy, so I probably can look at other words to see if there's a pattern or not.
Is the general from your pronunciation? I perceived it as if it was a kind of voice, devoiced or a pretty voiceless R,
They're all kinds.
all kinds. So it's very, yeah, because it
You can
sounded
have voice,
very.
exactly, and then you can have voice. There's some of the even the front, you can have that are they don't sound as voice, even though it's a voice sound. But if you put which is, this is the part that the spectrogram can do, of course, the
Of
spectrogram
course.
can give you all the details in that matter. But the list that is provided by Diaz and group, they show all kind of things. Even they put one category as not precise, which I find weird. But in terms of your first question, Puerto Rico is very small. You know,
I
it's
know.
a very tiny island, and we don't talk about we don't have sub dialects in the island. Of course, there's some differences between the east part of the island and the west. And people generally, the stereotype is that this is more common in the southwest of
Yeah,
the
that's why
island.
I was asking.
Yeah, but non-linguists have been probably have the courage to say that this only because of the migration, people move a lot. So you have people from all those areas also living in San Juan or living in Caguas, which are larger cities. So that would make it very difficult to say if this is just a part of one region of the island or not.
No, I just meant in tendencies, but yeah, that's fine. Yeah, thank you
Yeah.
very much.
Yeah. You can sometime, depending on how good your ear is, if you're Puerto Rican, you can say somebody come from the metropolitan area or come from a rural area. But this is more anecdotic that I'm sharing with you. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions?
Further questions?
I have a question. This is Stephen Gingrich. I can't figure out how to turn on my camera, but
Okay.
thank you, Antonio. And hello to all my colleagues all around the world, it looks like. We have offices right down the hall from each other, but this is a rare occasion when we get to talk about your work. And I was interested in what you described, because I hear these things with Puerto Rican students, and I can admit that I've always thought of it as simply replacing an R with an L, right? And one sees this in literary texts, and it's enlightening to me to realize that it's not that, that in fact there's a different kind of an R that's coming in that sounds maybe to me like an L. So I wonder if some of the effects of the perception of this variant have to do with writing and this perception that people who say barco instead of barco have a disconnection from the way that their language is being written. And so the perception might be somebody who says this in this way obviously does not ever write that word. Do you think that that's a factor that comes in, or is that something that could be studied even?
Well, you're talking now about the other, even though I focus mostly on the velar and uvular sound, but you're mentioning about the other variable, the change from R to L, which is common in the Caribbean, is common in other parts of Latin America, in Venezuela and Maracaibo. It have been heard in Dominican Republic, in Cuba, in part of Chile, so and of course in Andalusia. And in Andalusia, you don't only have change from R to L, you have the other way. You have change from L to R. So So something like El Niño become El Niño. And in another study, it's just that I didn't want to include so many things for this presentation, but I have done other studies. And one that I did was with writing, because I was interesting. Is this sound, the RL, reflect, it shows in writing? And yes, it shows in writing. So some people, with depending on their level of education, instead of writing perdón, they would write peldón. Or instead of amor, they would write amor. So there seems some level of confusion for the speaker, because they write what they hear. But at the same time, I teach Spanish or history of Spanish, and it's very interesting when we look at text from the 13th century, 14th century in Spain, you see that confusion already in the writing of the writers of that time. So some people tell me, oh, when they try to say this is a feature of Puerto Rican Spanish, I tell them this is as old as the history of language. So it's a feature that appear in text. I imagine you have seen text from the medieval time, and there's other inconsistencies. This is not the only one, but you can observe that kind of inconsistency in some of the writers. So yes, it can show. I analyze in another study. I analyze words from Facebook and from chat rooms. And you can see that people can write words that are supposed to be with R, and they change it for L. But there are other things. The other thing that I mentioned in my study is that also they do it for fun. So sometimes if you want to be very emphatic, people can do it also intentionally. So the word perdón means sorry. So if you want to say sorry in a very emphatic or sarcastic or with intensity, instead of perdón, you say perdón, perdón. And of course you have a tone, and you know that the person is playing with the sound. So so you see how internalized.
I'll remember that.
And how conscious people sometimes are about the use of the sound.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other? I can ask a question. Do you have the multiple vibrant in Hungarian or not?
Yeah, although it's not as trailed as in Spanish, but yeah, okay. But we do have it, but it normally triggers vowel lengthening for most speakers rather than.
But do you have distinction between single vibrant and multiple vibrant?
Yes, in theory, exactly. You do.
And you have a minimal pairs.
Yes, but it's not very functionally loaded.
Not very common,
so,
okay.
So we have ara, ora, yes, ora, but really it's very, very marginal. And as I said, for many speakers, the trilled R is more, it induces the preceding vowel lengthens rather than a really, so it's, it doesn't have so many trills as the Spanish one, the standard Spanish alveolar.
Okay.
Yes, we do in principle.
Good to know. Yeah, because I know several European. I have a student from Germany in my class last semester, and this semester, well, next semester she's going to be with me. And when she listened to the clips, she was familiarized with the pronunciation, because in some parts of Germany you might have more of uvular or velar sound.
Not in Hungarian.
No, but not in Hungarian.
We are very much in the front of the mouth.
Depending, of course, Germany is big, and the dialectal differences are huge between one city and the other. But it was interesting having her evaluating. Of course, I didn't include her in the study because she's neither Puerto Rican nor Latin America. But I just was interested in just to see her perception and say, oh, this sounds like something I have heard before. So it was a very interesting case. Hopefully you can follow. I know that sometimes people who are in phonology, we use a lot of terminology. Susanna knows what I'm talking about, that probably can lose some people. But well, I try to use examples to make sure that people can follow.
If I may, if nobody, I don't want to,
It's fine.
grab anybody's time. I was just wondering, we did a study with Spanish teachers, how the different varieties appear within the classroom. So what teachers' perceptions are and what do they teach, or what they actually teach, or how they teach the varieties. And I'm just wondering, but it was mostly focusing on Europe, because we had speakers from here and European Spanish mostly. And I was just wondering whether, you know, what whether you have a bigger ELE community in Puerto Rico, and whether, you know, so what the teachers' perceptions are, whether they are trying to speak the Spanish, the peninsular variety in the, you know, for foreign learners, or so what the attitudes of language teaching are.
Probably not anymore. Probably that was more common in the 60s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, that they use the norm from Spain as the standard. With the development of the different language academies across all the Latin American countries, there's a perception of a national norm for each country, and that seems to be a lot more clear. That doesn't mean that people don't still see Spain as a norm.
Right.
In one study that there's another study that I did with language attitudes Puerto Rican Spanish in Cleveland, people were able to identify Puerto Rican Spanish as the variety of prestige for the city, but not as the reference dialect to use for the classroom or to go to learn Spanish. So yeah. You see the difference. It's almost like there's some kind of cover prestige that exists. Of course, Puerto Ricans are the majority, so we have to, in some ways, accommodate to what they are doing to understand each other, because we're talking about more than 70% of the Latinos. But at the same time, they look at other varieties of the model. In terms of what happening in colleges, we have a little bit. Depending who you ask, I'm sure there's studies about it. That's not my area. But if you ask many of the teachers today, they say that they try to teach a Latin American variety of Spanish. But whatever that is. But one thing, but you teach whatever. If you are from Argentina or you're Colombian, that's the reference that you use. But you have the book. But it's very interesting that. For example, all the books, all the textbooks include the vosotros, which is the second plural form of address, which is only used in Spain.
Yeah.
And it's not used in all Spain, because you might have the sound, which they don't use it consistently, but that's included in the books. However, the use of vos, which is singular form, which is used in mostly all the Latin American countries, is not included.
I know that.
It's just a short single note in one page. And you have vosotros in Southern Mexico, in all Central America, in Chile, in Uruguay, in Argentina, in Paraguay, in Colombia, in Venezuela, with the exception of Peru and the Caribbean. All the other countries and Spain, all the other have both. So you see that there's still some kind of.
I know. I did interviews with Andalusian Spanish teachers, so coming from Andalusia, who dissimulate their accent in the classroom.
Yeah.
So that's.
Well, I have a Galician professor here from Galicia, and when he teaches to the lower level, she uses a Latin American norm. He doesn't use the tha, but of course in Galician you don't have tha, you don't have it. So for him it's very easy to switch. But when he's teaching an upper level class, he speaks naturally his Spanish, and he used the tha, and he used the vosotros and everything else, but not necessarily for the lower courses. Well, sorry, this is a conversation between.
So sorry, I'm.
That's okay. Anything else, Cristina?
I cannot see anybody else with hand. I was just wondering actually if there is a magicized technique experiment conducted ever regarding this issue.
Repeat again, if there's what?
Magicized technique experiment carried on.
I'm not sure about that.
Okay. I was just curious, because it could show some other Okay. Okay. Anything else?
Well, thank you for your participation today and listening. It's very interesting to have people from so far away listening to a presentation, but I'm very happy that you were able to attend and to share a little bit about Puerto Rican Spanish for you guys. So thank you very much.
Thank you everybody for coming.